I'm very pleased to be here to be able to talk about some of the work that my colleagues and I have been doing on decompilation. So before we get started, I'd like to start by asking you a question. If I asked you to tell me, what does this program actually do, would you rather start by looking at this version of the program, assembly code, or would you rather start by looking at this version of the program, which is the high-level source code? And I'm going to go out on a limb here, and I'm going to guess that you'd rather be looking at the source code version. And the reason is because source code has abstractions that make it easier for us to understand programs. These include things like functions, types, variables, and high-level control flow. But in security, oftentimes, even though programs may be compiled from source code, when they're distributed, we only get a copy of the compiled binary. And this is a problem because when programs are compiled, these abstractions are lost. They're not present in the final version of the binary that we might have access to. So this means that as researchers, when we're going to analyze these binaries, it can make things a little bit difficult. And that's where decompilation comes in. So decompilation is about how do we take this compiled binary that we get shipped to us and actually reverse the process of compilation, try to come up with source code that might have been used to compile that binary, and of course, including those abstractions that actually make it easier for us to understand what the program's doing. So in security, one of the most natural applications of decompilation is actually for manual reverse engineering. You probably saw from the two versions of the programs that reading source code tends to be quite a bit easier than looking at machine code because of the abstractions. We think the decompilers are a lot more useful and can be applied to more applications inside of security as well. So for instance, in security, we have a lot of techniques for looking at source code to do things like find bugs, find vulnerabilities, even automatically generate exploits. But some of these techniques that require access to source code, we have to have access to the source code to be able to use them. But decompilation allows us to relax that requirement a little bit by recovering the source code and potentially using these techniques where we wouldn't have been able to use them before. And I was very happy to hear at my first technical talk here at USENIX during the Dowsing for Overflows talk, a quote that was something like this, paraphrasing, that we need access to source code to access high-level control flow structures and types. And this just gets at the kind of abstractions that we need access to when we're doing some of this research. And again, decompilation is a way that we can try to recover this information rather than requiring that we have access to the original source code of the program. All right, so decompilers are going to help us solve some of these problems. But what properties do we want our decompilers to have? Well, the first property that we want is we want our decompilers to be able to recover abstractions effectively. And the reason for this is because it's really the abstractions that help us understand the program. So for instance, here's a version of a program in C that's not very abstract compared to one that's much more abstract. And again, we see the same effect where it's much more easy to understand the version that uses the high-level abstractions. Here, using the high-level control flow abstractions. The second property that we want out of our decompilers is that we'd like them to be correct. And the reason that we want this is because, for instance, if we're using the decompiled code to find bugs, if we find a bug in the decompiled version of the program, we want that to mean that there's also a bug in the original program and not that our decompiler is just not very accurate. So specifically, the property that we want for correctness is that if we take some program and we compile it, and then we take that compiled binary and decompile it and recover the source code for it, these two programs should be the same. They should be semantically equivalent. And we can think of that as meaning that if we run these two programs with the same input, we should get the same computation and we should have the same side effects occur in each of the programs. Now, decompilation's been studied for over 60 years. So you would think that making a decompiler that has these properties would be pretty simple at this point. But it turns out that that's not the case. So a lot of the existing research on decompilation focuses on manual reverse engineering. So some of the metrics that they are trying to do well on include things like the compression ratio metric that says that the output of a decompiler, the lines of code, should be much shorter than the lines of code in the assembly code version. And this is good. This makes it easier to read code, for sure. But it sidesteps issues like whether the output of the decompiler is correct, which is something that we care about. So this is what motivated us to start working on our own decompiler, the Phoenix decompiler, which is a decompiler that converts from x86 into C. And in Phoenix, we're trying to emphasize these properties that we want of correctness and being able to effectively recover abstractions. So how do we go about building such a decompiler? So one of the things that we do inside of Phoenix is that we try to break up the decompilation process into separate stages, where we, in each stage, we recover a separate abstraction. So we'll have a separate stage for recovering control flow, a separate stage for recovering types, and so on. And ideally, each one of these abstractions is going to be a semantics-preserving transformation. What that means is that as we learn something about the abstractions in the program, we're going to rewrite the program to take into consideration these abstractions, to put them into the program, but we want to make sure that we don't change the meaning of the program that we, as we do this transformation. It's a little bit similar to a compiler optimization where we rewrite the program, but again, we don't actually want to change the meaning of the program. So for example, if we start from this less abstract version of the program, we might have an abstraction recovery transformation that's going to recover information about control flow, rewrite the program, and again, ideally, we're not going to change the meaning here. Of course, actually building these abstraction recovery mechanisms is challenging. So in this talk, I'm going to focus on how can we actually build a mechanism for recovering high-level control flow structure of programs. And I want to point out that we're talking about trying to empirically demonstrate or experimentally demonstrate that our algorithms have these properties. We're not doing a formal proof. All right, so actually building an end-to-end decompiler, one that starts from a binary and then outputs source code on the other end, is actually a pretty daunting task. But because we're actually splitting up this process into recovering separate abstractions, we can split the decompiler and think about it in terms of the different components. Luckily, we also have some components that we can start from, and the first two components of Phoenix actually come from some of our existing work in static binary analysis. So the first component that we have in Phoenix is called control flow graph recovery. And in control flow graph recovery, we start from the binary and we put the program into a graph-like representation that's going to make it easier to do subsequent analyses. After that, we can start recovering information like types and high-level control flow structure. And then at the end of Phoenix, we're basically going to take all this information and put it together and use it to actually output the C source code that we can then do analysis on. So let's dive into more detail and look at some of these components. So control flow graph recovery is about putting the program into control flow graph form, where each vertex is representing straight line binary code. So it's binary code that doesn't have any conditionals or jumps in it. All the control flow that's in the program is actually represented by the edges that go between the vertices in this program representation. And the real challenge that we heard about a little bit in the last talk is, how do you figure out where these indirect jumps go? It's a very challenging problem. And the reason we have to know this for a control flow graph recovery is because we have to know which edges we actually need to add into the graph. So for this, we actually use an approximation analysis that's called value set analysis that, for example, for a jump EAX would try to approximate what the values in EAX could be, and then it would add edges for all of those values. So in type recovery, the goal is to actually figure out what are all the types that are being used by the program. And so for this, we build on an existing system called TIE, the system for type inference on executables. And what TIE does is for every instruction that it sees in the program, it generates constraints for how that instruction affects the types. So for instance, in this instruction, we would generate a constraint saying that EAX is being used as an address. So EAX must be a pointer to some unknown type A. We'd also add a constraint saying that EBX has type A, whatever it is. And then to actually figure out, well, what is type A, we actually generate these constraints for the whole program. We solve them, and the solution will actually tell us what are the candidates for type A. And as a result, we'll also know the types for EAX and EBX. All right, so now let's get into control flow structuring, which is really the focus of our work in Phoenix. So if we think about what happens when we take a high-level program that has high-level control flow structure and we compile it, internally what the compiler is doing is it's taking that and it's turning it into a control flow graph. So an if-then-else statement here, we can see that that turns into a diamond-shaped control flow graph because that matches what you think of the control flow of if-then-else as doing. It diverges and then it comes back together at the end. So what control flow structuring is control flow structuring is the process of reading one of these control flow graphs and trying to figure out what was the high level control flow structure that actually produced this particular control flow graph. In this case, we know the diamond shape again means an if then else. So there's two primary algorithms for doing control flow structuring. One of them is called interval analysis. And what interval analysis does is it decomposes the program into control flow intervals or regions. Structural analysis takes interval analysis a step further. In addition to identifying these different regions of the program, it also tells you what kind of region they are. So it will tell you that this is a while loop, this is a do while loop, or this is an if-then-else statement, for instance. Both of these have been used to actually perform control flow structuring inside of decompilers. But in Phoenix, we decided to base our algorithm off of structural analysis because that seems closest to what a decompiler needs to do. It needs to actually find what kind of regions we're looking at. So how does structural analysis work? Structural analysis starts out with a number of built-in patterns to the algorithm. So here we see that diamond shape for if-then-else, and we see another pattern for a while loop. And what structural analysis does is it iteratively searches over the control flow graph looking for these patterns. And when it finds a match to one of these patterns, it reduces that part of the graph, the part that matches the pattern, into a single node, and then it keeps running the algorithm. And at the end of the algorithm, what we get out is a control flow skeleton. So at the bottom here, we might see that we have a while loop with an if-then-else statement inside of it. So let me give you an example of how this works. So say that we start with the following control flow graph. Structural analysis would start searching for these different patterns, and it might see the diamond shape of an if-then-else. And it will reduce this into a single node, and then it will keep searching for more patterns. So next, it might notice that there's a sequence of two nodes that execute in order, reduce that, find a while loop, and eventually find a sequence. And we know that we're done when we end up with one final node at the end because we've structured everything. And so for this particular example, structural analysis would give us the following kind of result. And it should be pretty clear how we can actually take this kind of result and then use it to finally output the source code in the decompiler. All right, but let's take a step back and let's try to figure out if this is actually giving us the properties that we want in our decompiler. So first, is structural analysis going to be able to always effectively recover abstractions? And it turns out that structural analysis is very bad at recovering control flow structure for certain kinds of programs called unstructured programs. You can think of unstructured programs as programs that you have to generate using breaks, continues, and go-tos. And I'll give you an example of how structural analysis can fail when it sees these kind of constructs. So here's a simple program that's basically a while loop with a break inside of it, and it leads to this control flow graph. This particular edge actually corresponds to the break statement in the source code, and structural analysis would actually not be able to match any of the patterns for that loop region because of the existence of this break edge. So what structural analysis would do is it would mark this entire loop essentially as being unknown, and it would lead to the following decompilation. And you can see here in the decompiler output, we're not really getting nice high-level structured control flow. We're getting a bunch of go-tos, and it's very difficult to understand. So we'd like to improve this. So what we did in Phoenix to fix this particular problem is we added a feature to structural analysis called iterative refinement. And so the idea of iterative refinement is that if we can't match any patterns that are built into the algorithm, we try to figure out which edge is causing a problem, and then we temporarily ignore it as we continue to run the algorithm. And the basic idea for why this works is that it allows the algorithm to keep progressing and find more control flow structure in the control flow graph. So let's look at what our algorithm does on this example. So our algorithm would start running. It would not be able to match a pattern, but it would figure out that it needs to change this particular point to a break statement, and then it's going to ignore that edge that corresponds to the break. And so what happens is the algorithm keeps running, and here we see that it recovers additional structure, and for this particular example, it actually recovers the original control flow structure of the program. So that's the idea of iterative refinement. All right. So let's go back and look at and see if we actually get correctness. That's the other property that we wanted to have in our decompiler. It turns out that if we take the structural analysis algorithm and use it directly in decompilation, we also don't get correctness, in part because structural analysis was intended for another purpose, and we're repurposing it for decompilation. So here's an example program where we can run into some trouble. This is based on a real example that we found as we were doing our experiments. And what structural analysis would do on this example is it would identify this loop at the top, which structural analysis calls a natural loop, and it would reduce it to a single node. But already in this first step, it actually has done something bad. It's actually introduced non-determinism into the program because there's two branches coming out of this loop node, and they're not inverted. So it's possible for y equals 2 and x equals 1 to be true at the same time, in which case this representation of the program doesn't tell you where you should go, or at least uniquely. So the fix here is actually to ensure that we have semantics-preserving patterns inside the algorithm. So the idea is that this higher-level idea of semantics preservation we can also think of as applying inside of control flow structuring. So every time we realize that there's some structure in the program and we go ahead and we write it, again, ideally we want this to be semantics preserving, but in this case it's not. So in Phoenix, we went and we looked at all of the patterns that are built into the structural analysis algorithm, and we modified them so that they actually don't allow this kind of thing to happen. And the details for what kind of things you actually have to change are in the paper. All right, so let's talk about the Phoenix implementation and some of the evaluation that we've done. But first, let's look a little bit at what Phoenix decompiler output looks like. So Phoenix isn't specifically designed for manual reverse engineering, but we do want it to have readable decompiled code. And so on the left, you see a program that we took, we compiled, and we decompiled to get the version on the right. And there's some things that you can see that at first it's not identical. This is pretty typical. But you can see that we are recovering high-level control flow structure for this program. We're not introducing go-tos. We're making intelligent uses of statements like breaks. And in general, the high-level control flow structure of the program is there. And this is pretty typical for Phoenix decompiler output. All right, next let's talk about the large-scale experiments that we've done. So remember that we have this, this control flow structuring algorithm, and we want to know how well it's doing. Is it correct, and can it recover abstractions well? So we wanted to do a large-scale test to see how well it's doing, and also to see how does Phoenix stack up against the best decompilers that are out there right now. So we tested Phoenix, and we tested against what we think is the industry state-of-the-art, HexRays. I'd be surprised if there aren't a lot of you that have used HexRays in the room. But it's an industry decompiler that's often used for manual reverse engineering. And from academia, we tested the Boomerang decompiler, which is now an open source decompiler that you can go and download. But almost immediately, we ran into problems doing this large scale experiment because some decompilers just aren't stable enough to be run on real programs. So in Boomerang, for a lot of the programs that we were testing, just simply didn't terminate in any reasonable amount of time. It didn't show any signs of making progress, and so eventually we had to give up on the idea of actually testing Boomerang. So we went ahead and tested Phoenix against HexRays. And the programs that we were looking at are the Core Utils suite of programs. And we chose these for two reasons. First, there's a variety of programs that have different complexities. So there's some simple programs in Core Utils, and there's some more complicated ones in Core Utils. And also because it contains a built-in test suite, which will become relevant in a couple minutes. But the metrics that we ideally wanted to test were, again, these properties we want in the decompiler, effective abstraction recovery. And for this paper, we were focusing on control flow structuring, so that was the primary abstraction that we measured. And also we wanted to see how correct our output is. So if we look at how much control flow structure that we're recovering compared to Phoenix, compared to HexRays, Phoenix can decompile the Core Utils in our experiments using 40 go-tos compared to 51 for HexRays. And really, these are both pretty good numbers because if we use Phoenix and we use the basic structural analysis algorithm, that is, we don't use iterative refinement, then we need over 1,000 go-tos. So what this tells me is that iterative refinement is an effective technique for recovering structure. And in addition, HexRays, whatever it's using, we don't know, is also doing a pretty good job. So the second thing we wanted to measure is correctness. And again, ideally, correctness is a semantic property. So we'd like to know, is the original source code semantically equivalent to the recovered source code? But this is extremely difficult to measure. It's difficult to do these proofs by hand. It's also difficult to build tools that evaluate this automatically. So we decided not to use this particular method of evaluating correctness in our experiments because we thought that it would limit the size of the programs that we could practically handle. So instead, what we did is we used the test suites that are built into the programs we were testing, and we ran the recovered source code and the original source code on the test to make sure that they passed. And the idea is that if the test suite is robust, and we can actually decompile programs correctly enough to pass the test, we're still doing a pretty good job. And the good thing about this kind of metric is that we can actually run it on a large-scale experiment. So using this idea for testing how well these utilities are working, we can measure how many utilities HexRays and Phoenix can both decompile correctly. So HexRays can decompile 28. Phoenix can decompile a little bit more than twice that at 60. And if we take Phoenix and we use the basic version of structural analysis again, without our changes to semantics preservation this time, we only get 46. So again, these changes that we're making are actually having an impact on our large-scale experiments. Now, there is a bit of bad news for both Phoenix and for HexRays. And the bad news is that there's actually 107 utilities in CoreUtils. So we're still falling short of the number that we'd like to be at. So this, of course, begs the question, why are HexRays in Phoenix falling short of 100% correctness, these two advanced compilers? So in Phoenix, we actually have the source code, so we can actually dig in and figure out what's going on here. And in Phoenix, we were able to trace these problems back to the type recovery component that we used in Phoenix. The good news is that we didn't actually trace any of these problems back to the control flow structuring algorithm, which is the new part that we actually built for Phoenix. So that's the good news. But what we can think about that's happening here is that Phoenix is basically a stress tester of a type recovery system. In some of these cases, getting even one type wrong can actually mean that you decompile the entire program incorrectly. So this is definitely a challenging problem. And in some cases, the system that we're using, TIE, either doesn't find variables, it doesn't realize that there's a variable that exists and tell TIE about it, tell Phoenix about it, or sometimes the information that it gets is too general. So what TIE does is it gives you a range of types. And sometimes that range is simply all of the types, in which case it's very difficult to actually decompile the program correctly. All right, so to wrap things up, in this paper we built the Phoenix decompiler. Our ultimate goal for Phoenix is really to have correct and abstract decompilation. Phoenix features our control flow, our new control flow structuring algorithm, that has iterative refinement to help recover more structure, and it also has semantics preserving schemas to make sure that we don't introduce correctness problems. We also performed what we believe is the largest systematic evaluation of decompilers that measures correctness and abstraction recovery. And in these experiments, we demonstrated that Phoenix is doing well at control flow structuring, but we still have some work to do on correctness. But even though we can't decompile 100% of these programs correctly right now, we do feel that this is a goal that's within reach. We feel that we're close. So in this paper, we focused on improving control flow structuring. Now we know that our next direction that we need to look at is improving static type recovery. And so that's going to be the next thing that we look at in Phoenix. So thank you very much. I'd love to answer your questions.
Please step up to the microphone.
Hi, Jasper Beekman, UC Berkeley. I have two questions. The first is, do you have a baseline for the go-to metric? Like, how many go-tos were there in the original source code?
That's actually a good question, and I don't have an exact answer just because of the way that we counted them. So we used a framework called SIL that can actually slightly modify the number of go-tos as it counts them. So the simple answer is that I don't have the precise number. But I suspect that it is very close to 40 and 50.
Okay. And the second question, did you try to decompile any non-C programs, like programs that were not originally written in C?
It's not something we tried. And for now, it's not something that we're focusing on. We're trying to focus on specifically looking at C compiler output.
Thanks.
Rick Farrow. So I have a related question. You looked at Linux core utils, and that's nice, and I understand why you did it, but so you were going along and I was thinking, IDA Pro, did you actually look at any things that were deliberately written or packed so you could see whether your tool would work on those, written to be obscured?
So you mean things that would be intentionally
malware.
Obfuscated?
Yes.
So I think that brings us to one of the trade-offs of decompilation in that you start making assumptions about where your output's coming from. So far we've been focusing on, again, assuming that the output that we're looking at is coming out of a compiler. So we haven't been looking at obfuscations. I think that in practice, the best way of dealing with those would try to be undoing the obfuscations before you gave it to a decompiler or even just a general purpose static binary analysis.
Okay.
Those things are hard to handle.
Fair enough. Thanks.
Thanks.
Mike Hicks, University of Maryland. A slightly related question. Were the core utils programs compiled with optimizations on?
They were compiled with the default, which I think is O2.
Do certain optimizations pose any problems for your tool in terms of it is output from a compiler, but maybe it very much changes the control flow that the original program might have had and maybe still makes it hard to read?
Certainly not by design. So we're not trying to special case on patterns or anything along that nature. It is possible that changing the optimizations could change the control flow that we see, and maybe we hit an unexpected code path. But that's kind of the kind of problem that we might see.
Scott Carlin, Princeton University. So for measuring correctness at the semantic level, have you considered using systems for detecting software plagiarism as a metric for how close a program might be at a source code level, such as MOS?
That's an interesting idea. One of the things that we've seen is that the problems can actually be quite subtle. So some of the type problems that we've seen, literally, there were only one or two things different, and that broke the whole program. So it may be the case that the change is just too small for one of those systems to find syntactically.
István Holler, VU Amsterdam. So you mentioned in the correctness that all the errors were due to the type inference engine. But what happens with hex rays? Because I expected the type inference of engine of hex rays is even worse than ties. So were you able to confirm or look at what the hex rays generated?
So since we had the source code to Phoenix, I really only dove into those problems in detail. I know that, so the author of the tie system, who probably knows more about the hex rays type inference than I do, is here. So that's something that maybe we could ask him offline. I'm not sure where those errors are coming from predominantly.
Ben Taylor, Cisco. I was curious, so you generate source code, you compile it to a binary, you ran it for correctness testing. Did you then decompile that binary and see, sort of in cyclical to see if that produced anything interesting?
That's a good question. I don't think that's something that we actually tried. So is the idea to see if it hits a fixed point?
Yeah, exactly. Or to see how the decompilation would change after mm-hmm. it had gone through one time or multiple times.
That's an interesting idea, but it's not something that we tried.
Okay. Any more questions? We actually have a few more minutes. No? Okay, so while the next presenter is connecting, I wanted to ask a question as well. Is there some sort of ambiguity in terms of order, which is to say you can perform more than one collapsing at the same time? And if so, is there a notion of optimality that's hidden there somewhere that you've explored?
So the idea is that the graph is traversed in post order, and the idea is to try to collapse the inner parts. So if you have nested regions, the idea is to collapse the inner parts of the regions before you can recognize the outer ones.
So if you were to take an alternative strategy, would that yield better results? So you haven't tried that?
So that particular strategy actually comes from the structural analysis algorithm. So we copied that part of it.
Okay. Thank you. Let's thank the speaker.